the J.C. Corcoran Podcast.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Mr. Leach. I'll be able to kiss you again.
Every morning, wide awake, 11 o'clock.
I'm awake.
How about you?
I'm awake, but I can't get my eyes open. In the
morning, rise and shine, up and at 'em.
When I wake up early in the morning, lift my head, I'm still yours.
Good morning, starshine.
One fine morning, girl, I'll wake up.
Beautiful morning.
Gotta get up every morning just to say goodnight to you.
'Cause I'm leaving when I see that morning sky.
Good morning, you sure look fine.
The morning sun has gone.
Wake up, sunshine.
Wake me up.
Get up, baby, get up, get up, get up.
One morning, I woke up.
Sandman working overtime last night?
I looked out this morning and the sun was gone.
When does the sun come up around here?
It's a wonderful day.
'Cause he gets up in the morning.
I get up in the morning and it's just another day.
I try to get up every morning and watch television all day.
Get up every morning.
Wake up time.
When you wake up in the morning and the light has hurt your head.
It's almost 9 o'clock. We've got to go to work.
Wake up time.
I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
21st of June, 2021, the J.C. Corcoran Podcast is coming out of your speakers here at jcontheline.com. This is going to be interesting to see if I can get a full 30 minutes out of this voice today. I had one of those steroid injections last week, and one of the side effects of it is that it thins out your voice, and you start losing your voice. So I sound like I'm struggling to talk here. Let's see how it goes. I apologize in advance for the whole thing. All right, now, I'm absolutely fascinated by comedian Nikki Glaser from Kirkwood. I think she's about 35, 36, 37, somewhere in there. She is the queen. She was on with Bill Maher on Friday night, and Bill Maher's like, I saw you doing the roasts on Comedy Central and immediately fell in love with you, thought you were absolutely amazing. She is. She'll say anything. She's very fine. I mean, there's a lot of insult comics, and there's a lot of, really sort of like gross people who will get up on stage and say and do anything, and some of them are women. But the difference in Nikki Glaser is she's semi-hot, depending on how you look at her. There are some days where I've seen her, it's like, you need some new makeup and lighting or something. Not that that is the be-all and the end-all, because ultimately, if you go to see a comedian, it's whether the jokes are funny and you're laughing. But there are times where you look at her and you're like, this chick is hot. And from Kirkwood, originally, went to New York, went to L.A., started building a name for herself in the clubs. And people were like, this chick is a riot. And like I said, and as Bill Maher mentioned the other night, she started doing all of the Comedy Central roasts and just hitting it out of the park every single time.
No, I'm good about it. I take the pill when I remember. So that's not how you're supposed to take it. A lot, my friend was like, why don't you do it like a diaphragm? And I'm like, are you from the 80s? Like, what's going on? I didn't really do my research on the diaphragm. I should have asked my grandma about it, but she uses a pull-out method, so... I've always heard about the diaphragm on, like, old episodes of Seinfeld and Antiques Roadshow, and I'd never seen one, so I Google imaged it, and the image that came up, I don't know if you guys have seen a diaphragm, but they look exactly like that toy we used to get as kids, that little rubber thing you flip, then you, like, set it on something, and you wait, and then it, like, pops. I don't even know what those are called. I think they're diaphragms, guys. Yeah, I don't know how you put them in. That seems weird. Maybe you would just flip it and then set it down and then, like, hover over it and, like, wait.
Unspeakable. Almost borderline gynecological discussions, but also funny as hell. Just really, really funny. But, you know, it's very exciting for people who like to watch a star sort of be born. You know, that very exciting, unmistakable meteoric rise of, in this particular case, a comedian who's popping up everywhere, making everybody laugh. Everybody wants her for their shows, and it's all going great. So what happens? The pandemic hits. She freaks out a little bit about a lot of things, like a lot of us did, and decides to move back to her parents' house in Kirkwood and begin writing a television series about, and here's the premise, an entertainer, not unlike herself, whose star starts to rise and she becomes very, very successful in the entertainment industry. And then one of those canceling moments takes place and she basically loses everything and has to move back after, you know, having a New York and Hollywood, you know, entertainment, money, lifestyle, and has to move back with her parents in St. Louis while she tries to figure out how she's going to get back on her feet again. And that's the premise of the series. And so she's been doing that for like the last year, living in Kirkwood and writing this thing while using the actual experiences that she, Nikki Glaser, is having while living at home with her parents and writing, incorporating all of that into the television series, into the sitcom. Supposedly, we're going to start seeing this on our TVs somewhere, I don't know, late this year, maybe early next year. I don't know. But I'm fascinated by this whole thing. So I'm very, very happy for her. And with that in mind, there's a lot of people who are facing similar circumstances. Okay, maybe you're not famous and you have to move back in with your parents after some sort of canceling event. But because of financial issues, you know, a lot of people got really knocked off their skates over the course of the last year and a half, trying to decide what they want to do with the rest of their lives, reevaluating their lives and just trying to say to themselves, I'm not sure that what I was doing is going to make me happy for the rest of my life. They go back, they move in with their parents for a year or two, just trying to sort of figure things out. Well, with all that in mind, researchers at North Carolina State talked to a bunch of people who recently did have to move in with their parents again, and they came up with a few tips that are supposedly to make the whole experience easier on everyone. We'll see, won't we? So here are four science-backed tips for moving back in with your parents. Number one, set clear expectations. For example, are you going to pay them for any rent? Are you going to help with the bills? Whatever the situation is, just make sure everybody is on the same page. Number two, contribute in some way, even if it's just helping with chores. Make sure you help out in one way or another. If you don't, they're going to start feeling like you're taking advantage of them. Number three, set a timeline. Sit down with them and talk about how long you're planning to stay. It might also help to, that's if you know, I don't know. It might also help to talk to one another about timelines like career goals, how long you need to save up money. And number four, and this might be the more difficult one, act like an adult. Don't fall back into old habits or throw raging parties when they're not home. Make sure you are respectful and remember it is their place, not yours. Something tells me none of those 4 points will be incorporated into this situation comedy, this series that Nikki Glaser is writing. But this is very exciting. I'm really, really looking forward to this. And I just think she's just terrific. Very, very excited for St. Louis and Kirkwood native Nikki Glaser. I don't know what kind of summer job you had when you were a kid in high school or college, but I worked in a factory for 2 years. When I say factory, that's putting it really politely. It was a dirty, greasy, disgusting, hot, non-ventilated, I guess you would say warehouse, with a lot of characters, a lot of immigrants. It was quite an education, by the way. You're like 17 years old, and you're meeting people from the inner city for the first time. And you're just not meeting them. You're working with them every day. You're socializing with them. You're standing around talking. You're learning about their lives. They're learning about yours. Some of these guys were borderline criminal. I'm convinced of it. And most of them were just, you know, nice guys from the city trying to make a living. Didn't have much education, didn't have, you know, really high IQs or anything, but you're, you know, you got to do something. So you work in a factory. And as college kids, they had a program for kids to come in and make college money during the summer. I did that for 2 years and just, it was like, that's it. I don't want any more of this. And I found a job at a Woolworth's warehouse. That was 142 years ago today, 1879, that Frank Woolworth opened his first five and dime store in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. He sold items for no more than 10 cents and he went broke. So then he opened another store at a better location, went on to become one of America's richest men. And I worked in one of the biggest Woolworth's distribution centers in the entire United States because it was in the city of Chicago. And so I'd walk in every day and there would be these giant conveyor belts all over the place. And it was noisy. It was really noisy. And these giant boxes of toys and sports equipment, batting cages, lawn equipment, more toys, boxes and boxes and crates of brightly colored plastic shit that I don't even know what it was. And it was our job to pull these boxes off the conveyor belt, load them onto a carrier that had four wheels on it. And then when you couldn't get any more boxes on the carrier, whoever the last guy was putting the last box on, you would wheel that carrier all the way to the other end of the warehouse and put it by the loading dock. And then the guys would load the thing onto the truck. The truck would then go to your local neighborhood Woolworth store, and then you would purchase it. And that place was clean and it was air conditioned and that wasn't bad. But then one day they came along and they said mandatory overtime. Well, we already had to be there at 7:30 in the morning and now they're telling us, you know, and it was great. Don't get me wrong, it was great. You know, more money for college, just more money in general. But now you're like, you're there like 10 hours a day. And then they're like, plus weekends. So they had to come in on Saturday too, work half a day. And I know it sounds like I'm complaining. I probably was at the time because you want some free time for yourself. You're 17, 18 years old and you're not getting a chance to do anything because you're at work all day. You go home, you take a shower, you go to bed, the alarm goes off and you go right back at it. And I am convinced that my dad, and of course, yesterday being Father's Day, I'm convinced that my dad had me do all that to remind me what life would be like if I didn't stay in college and get my degree. Little did he know that even though I got my degree, I worked in radio for the first 10 years of my life and never made any money and had working conditions that were about as bad as the factory. But it was the thought that counted. But I sure did make a lot of money for college. Got me off the hook. And a job like that, I guess, was less humiliating than, for example, our former producer, Karen Kelly, who had to walk around the Galleria for an entire weekend dressed as a Crayola. Think I'm making that up? I'm not. But you're young and you need money and you'll pretty much do anything. And it was 56 years ago today, 1965, the Byrds released their debut album with a little song title track written by Bob Dylan. And in, I believe it was 1999, one Mr. Roger McGuinn of the Byrds came walking into our studio and performed for us live on the air.
One of the things that happened in 91, you were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Just right. Talk about what that experience was like.
That was great. We were all together for the last time. Michael Clark, the Wayward Bird, you know, Gene Clark and David Crosby and Chris Hillman and I were all sitting at this table. And it was a little bit tense because, as I said, Michael had been going out doing the Byrds thing. And David and Chris and I didn't like it too much. Anyway, we all got up and played on stage, and it was wonderful. It was great. Don Henley was up there. Jackson Brown was up there playing with us. And we had a great time with...
It's live, folks.
Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. I'm not sleepy, and there ain't no place I'm going to. Hey, Ask your tambourine man, play a song for me. In the jingle jangle morning, I'll come following you. Take me for a trip upon your magic swirling ship. All my senses have been stripped. In my hands can't feel to grip. In my toes too numb to step. Wait only for my boot heels to be wandering. I'm ready to go anywhere. I'm ready for to fade. On to my own parade. Cast your dancing spell my way. I promise to go under it. Hey, misty tambourine man, play a song for me. I'm not sleepy and there ain't no place I'm going to. Hey, misty tambourine man, play a song for me. In the jingle jangle morning, I'll come following you.
Pretty nice moment there from Roger McGuinn live in our studios. I was watching The Love Boat last night for some odd reason. Bernie Capel, Doc from The Love Boat, 88. Boy, that show is stupid. I watch it. People are like, why are you watching The Love Boat? Because I'm just fascinated to look back at what passed for entertainment 40 years ago. I just can't believe it. You just watch it, and people would stay home on Saturday night to watch The Love Boat. And you watch it now, like, what a sappy bunch of people we were watching that. Ray Davis, the Kinks, and that apparently is the correct pronunciation. We said Davies for a long time, but apparently, even though it's spelled like Davies, and we got a pitcher named Davies now, but apparently it's pronounced Davis. He's 77 today. Meredith Baxter did Family Ties, and Michael Gross did Family Ties, and both actors were born on exactly the same day. Meredith Baxter, Bernie, and Michael Gross, both 74 years old today. Nils Lofgren from the E Street Band is 70. Juliette Lewis from Natural Born Killers, Cape Fear, 48. Chris Pratt, Guardians of the Galaxy, 42. And this got a lot of attention a couple of months ago. I don't know how many years ago it was, maybe 10, maybe 8. There was a singer that performed on Saturday Night Live who gave such a lifeless, unspirited performance that people started saying that in the entire, 45-year history of Saturday Night Live and all of the amazing musical performances, that this one was probably the worst ever. I think it was a song called Video Games, if I'm not mistaken. Her name is Lana Del Rey. And again, here's another person that, depending on how I look at her, she either looks really, really devastatingly pretty, and then other times you look at her and now she just sort of looks gawky, and I still haven't decided. But Lana Del Rey puts out these albums, and they're interviewing Bruce Springsteen a couple of months ago, and they ask him, what have you been listening to yourself? And he's like, I really like this Lana Del Rey album. And people were like, what? So it gave everybody pause, shall we say. She is 36 years old today. That no talent ass clown from the Summer Olympics a couple of years ago, the swimmer Ryan Lochte, he failed to qualify for this year's Summer Olympics. And President Biden's dog Champ died. He's the one that didn't bite people. And Nick Cannon, you know, this guy's on all the TV game shows. He stands in the hallways and just sort of goes, wow. And I know he does other stuff beyond that, but that's all I ever see the guy do. He's expecting a baby with his girlfriend, which in and of itself is not some big story. But he also just welcomed twins with another woman, and a third woman had a child with him in December, meaning he will soon have had four kids with three different women in less than a year. So sort of a traditionalist. But I guess it happens when you're in a industry where you have people just throwing themselves at you. I guess it's an occupational hazard. I don't know. But you never know when you're going to meet the person that you are going to attempt to make miserable for the rest of your life. Conan O'Brien, his future wife, was an audience member for his show back in 2000. When he saw her, he fell for her instantly. Billy Joel Armstrong met his future wife at a Green Day concert in Minneapolis in 1990. Steve Harvey was doing a stand-up comedy set, and his future wife arrived late. He paused his set and said, quote, "Oh, I'm sorry, I don't know who this is, but I'm going to marry her." And then he did. Patrick Dempsey scheduled a quick trim with a hairdresser, and after 2 years as her client, he asked her out. They eventually got married. Ringo met his first wife at the club the Beatles were playing at. They were married for 10 years, had 3 kids. Nicolas Cage got married to his waitress in an LA restaurant 2 months after meeting her. The relationship lasted 12 years. And Hanson is still considered a show business story. All three brothers met their wives at concerts. It's like the Three Stooges. The Three Stooges, in all their episodes, they never met. One of the Stooges never met a woman, and the other two sort of stood by. As you'll recall, all three of them met girls at the same time. There were always three women for the Three Stooges. Ah, if life was only that simple. And Amazon Prime Day starts today. This is the day Jeff Bezos personally travels to mom and pop stores from sea to shining sea and kicks owners in the nuts. It is going to be a big, big day for the credit card. Or as I've often said, somebody stole my wife's credit card, but we didn't report it because the guy who stole the card spends less than she does. Good morning, everybody. This is one of those interviews that I never really got to put on the radio because they gave me the opportunity to interview her, but the kinds of radio stations I work at tend to be rock stations, and so there's no room for the Bangles. Even though I know that most men like rock and roll, and most men also like women. You put 4 hot chicks up there who can play and can sing and look pretty good doing it, and I'm sure that I'm not the only person who's been crazy about the Bengals since the mid-1980s. And they played the Westport Playhouse back around, I don't know, it was probably 86, 87, somewhere in there. And there's a famous picture, which I should probably put up on my Facebook page today at the Showgram with J.C. Corcoran, of me in a pair of white pants. It was the middle 80s, of course, sitting on a couch backstage at the Westport Playhouse. Anyhow, it wasn't until just a handful of years ago, maybe I want to say 5 or 6 years ago, that I got a chance to talk to the lead singer of the Bangles, a very, very handsome woman, Susanna Hoffs. Today's JC Celebrity A-List interview of the day.
Susanna, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
You and I sat on a couch in the basement of the Westport Playhouse back in 1986. And it was just to show you how long ago that was, I was wearing white pants.
that's awesome.
You're allowed to giggle. That's all right. So I've liked the Bangles forever, and women like what they like, but men were, especially the men who were rockers, were always not so sure about admitting to the fact that they liked the Bangles. But you guys were so awesome looking, and you had these catchy songs. Did you have much trouble being taken seriously as a real band and real musicians?
Well, I think for whatever reason, it was still somewhat viewed as a novelty, women who play instruments and like drums. I mean, I guess there's been folk singers through the ages, but something about the idea of an all-girl band still seemed at that point in the 80s as something fairly novel. So we definitely had to talk about it more than we thought we would. But for us, it became almost a challenge to just kind of prove to the world or show the world that, you know, it was a very normal thing to us to be playing rock and roll. We started out in the garage, literally, in L.A., jamming and writing songs, and it just kind of progressed from there.
Well, you know, I just finished interviewing Anna and Nancy Wilson a couple of months back for their book.
Oh, they're great.
Yeah, their book, Kicking and Dreaming, was fabulous. But the horror stories and the way that certain men, particularly in the music and the record business, treated them, I mean, it was just awful. Did you guys have much of that?
It's terrible that Anna and Nancy had to experience that. I mean, we didn't experience anything that I would consider terrible. It was just sort of demoralizing over time to realize that you had to keep explaining it. Something that felt so natural. I'm sure they experienced that. For them, they had been playing music their whole lives, and that was true for us too, the Bangles, all of us in the band. And so it just didn't seem like something we needed to keep talking about. But you know, that's just I think more and more, you know, it helped pave the way, hopefully, for other women to just pick up bass or play drums or plug into an amp and play electric guitar, that's just a normal thing.
I want to talk about a couple of your songs. Walk Like an Egyptian. I'm not really sure people still know what to make of that song. Where did it come from, and what are we to make of that song? Because as I said, I think there's people who hear it now and say, I have no idea what they're singing about.
I mean, we kind of were feeling the same way when we first heard it, but we fell in love with it. I actually heard it at Columbia Records, where our producer, David Kahn, played it for me. He had somehow stumbled upon a demo tape of it, and a woman named Marty Jones was singing it, and it's just a quirky song. There's actually a line in the movie To Kill a Mockingbird with Gregory Peck where the two children who are the lead characters in it are, somebody says, let's walk like Egyptians. I guess they're studying something about that in their history class. But, you know, it's definitely a quirky song, but there was something so catchy about it that once we all heard it, we couldn't get it out of our heads. So we decided to record it on a whim and throw it on the album, kind of just for fun, and who would have thunk that it ended up becoming a big hit for us.
And then on the flip side, you get a song like If She Knew What She Wants, which I think a lot of people listened to for a long time before they really understood what that song was about. It was actually sort of a complicated theme. The idea that a man should not be seen as providing everything that a woman needs in her life. Well, you talk a little bit about the song.
Well, it was written by our friend Jules Shear, and that's one of the things that's always fun when you do cover other people's songs, and I've done this with Matthew Sweet on Under the Covers, our new record.
Yeah.
Take a song that's written or sung originally by a man, coming from that perspective, and you kind of flip it around. It's like it's fun to sort of skew the perspective on the song, and I think it's basically just about, it was just about relationships, you know, and how difficult they are to get just right. I don't think we ever do, even those of us who are in long relationships. It's just the way that it is. Trying to figure out what someone else is thinking or how they're feeling and how to make it work. And I think that song, when we took it on, we were flipping it around, and our point of view was being put in there, and I think that's what makes it kind of more layered than it might have been.
All right, so you and Matthew Sweet doing Under the Covers 3. What is it about you and the 60s? I love the 60s, but not everybody has the same appreciation for the music of that era.
I think you always have an attachment to the era that maybe was the era where you fell in love with music. For me personally, that was the 60s. For a lot of people, it's become the 80s, which is very fun for me, and I have to say great for the Bangles too. So yeah, Matthew and I started making these covers records thinking it was going to be 60s, and they were just starting with the first one, and we found ourselves on volume 3 working our way through the 60s, through the 70s, and up to the 80s. So kind of back where I started, in a way, having been in a band that, you know, mostly worked during the 80s. There's something about the 60s, I think, that's undeniably a golden era for music.
Now, please tell me that when you perform live, please tell me you still do that thing with your eyes.
Oh, sometimes.
I mean, Susanna, there were certain times where I saw you perform. I had to adjust myself in the chair. I mean, it was very, very effective. It couldn't have been any sexier.
Thank you. What would happen for me was that I would kind of find a couple key people in the audience, and I probably embarrassed them a lot because I would pick three people, one in the middle and one on each side. And the thing with the eyes that was in the Walk Like an Egyptian video was that we were performing in front of a live audience, and the camera was really far away, but it was using a long lens, so it was actually in close-up on me. But I was kind of like singing that line to my person on the left and my person on the right. it was a way for me to stay connected. And yes, I still do sing to people in the audience, and still occurs.
One last question. You have an alarmingly sweet, genuinely engaging disposition, and yet you've been in the music business for 30 years. How are you not jaded and just some crabby old woman?
That's excellent. Well, I feel very, very lucky that the thing I love doing the most, which is playing music and writing songs and singing, I still get to do. I mean, my God, that is so incredible. So I have something to be really thrilled and happy about. So yay, I mean, I made it this far and I'm still doing what I love. I can't complain.
All right. Again, along with Matthew Sweet, Susanna Hoffs, Under the Covers 3. And thank you for spending a little time with us this morning.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Bye.
And let me just tell you something. This is the God's honest truth. I would have been crushed if she had turned out to be an asshole. And she was so sweet, as you just heard right there, Susanna Hoffs. And that's it. The J.C. Corcoran Podcast for the 21st of June 2021 is in the can. We are here every weekday morning. We post at 7 o'clock. Spread the word if you can. We'll talk to you in the morning. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.